here to break down the Royals and to talk Chiefs, because we know the Chiefs draft is eight days away. Chiefs will have their first pick in the NFL draft late in the first round, and here to talk all of Royals and Chiefs and whatever else we want to talk about is Seren Petro of Sports Radio 810 WHB out of Kansas City, host of the program every single weekday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Seren, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Wade. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for your time, as always. Appreciate it. Let's get right into it. The Royals last night, they win 8-6. Your feeling so far after watching the Royals, after they have played 13 games, they're 9-4, but there's certainly some reasons to be concerned. Wouldn't say panic, but maybe be concerned. And then there's also reasons to be really optimistic that with these flaws, if you want to call them that, they're still 9-4.
Yeah, and I think that's, what do you want to do, half full or half empty? I mean, I think that 9-4 and two-time AL pennant winner and defending world champion, you got to say that, they deserve the benefit of the doubt at this point. So, I'm going to choose to say it's half full and say that, look, this is a team that's got a couple of its major bullpen pieces that aren't necessarily firing, and Joaquin Soria and Danny Duffy, yet they're still sitting at 9-4. They also are not hitting anywhere close to what they did last year, and that's maybe the bigger concern, because I think you can bump Joaquin Soria out of the eighth, which I think will probably happen today when he gets to the ballpark, just reading the tea leaves of how Ned answered the questions last night, because I was one of the guys asking him the questions, and that just seemed to be where his, he said, hey, we'll talk about it. We don't do it right after the game, but, we like our structure, and structure is important, but, if there's a need to change the structure, we'll do it. So I think that change is probably coming with Joaquin Soria, and I think you can manage around that with Hochaver and Herrera and Davis. You've got spots that you can go and get it done. I also think Jimmy Wong's been effective and Dylan G's been effective. I think they've got some good bullpen pieces down in the minors that can come up and help them out too. So I think that's going to be okay. Question is the offense. I talked a lot about the starting pitching needing to be better, which it has, but that the offense was probably the thing that you expected and should plan on a regression from the Royals. Last year they moved to being the fifth or sixth best offense in the American League after being one of the worst offenses in the American League the year before. I think they're over their skis a little bit, and there should be a bit of a market correction, but I don't think it should be where it is now. I think there is better days to come for the Royals offense, but I think it's something you need to be prepared for. They're going to need those close wins because they're going to need to win and maybe win easy when they do hang eight on the board, which didn't end up being the case last night.
Well, here's the thing that was disappointing to me last night, and that is that the Royals' rotation, Ian Kennedy has been outstanding. He goes to the hill tonight for the Royals. Volquez has been solid. Ventura has shown certainly flashes of the possibility he's going to turn the corner, and he pitched last night. But this is the thing that bugs me, and I don't know there's so many statistics in baseball, and I know I don't watch every single Major League Baseball team every single night. I watch my team, that's the Royals. But the Royals have to be near the bottom if this is even a category, and that is for pitch efficiency. It just seems like every time we get into the fifth or sixth inning, the starter is at 98 pitches, 100 pitches. And he's probably not going to come back out for the seventh, so thus the bullpen's going to have to throw a third of the game again, the seventh, eighth, or ninth. Last night, a good example, Yordano Ventura gets into trouble a couple of times, gets out of base load of jams, 99 pitches, but he only goes five innings. And I heard after the broadcast, well, he pitched great. I don't know if pitching great means having nine base runners in five innings. That's two per inning. I can do the math, which means that, and he walked three, he gave up six hits. I know that he has all this potential, and I'm not giving up on the kid, but 99 pitches in five innings, and you're up 8-2, and you still got to go to the bullpen in the sixth. That has to change.
Yeah, I think when you get up 5-0, you're counting on six from Yordano Ventura, and I think that was, he wasn't happy-go-lucky. They got the win last night. He got the win. He did some good things like getting a strike out of Miguel Cabrera with the bases loaded to get out of a jam that was really, started with an error, throwing error by himself. And I think that's one of the things to keep in mind as well. I'm with you. I do think when you look at their overall numbers, let's start with that part of the equation. When you look at their overall numbers, I mean, Ian Kennedy's got a sparkling .66 ERA. He's got a whip of .73. Now, whip is walks plus hits divided by innings pitched. To me, it's one of the easier stats to get your arms around. That is one of the most telling stats in pitching. I know there's all these advanced metrics, and you look at FIP, fielding independent pitching, and xFIP, and all these different things. And they all kind of line up with whip. If you're keeping base runners off the bases, right, which is what this is, walks and hits, mm-hmm. divided by your innings pitch, then you're going to be effective. Well, Kennedy's been extraordinarily effective. He's had only 10 base runners in 13 2/3 innings. That .66 ERA is rock solid. You mentioned Volquez. Volquez got a 2.04 ERA, right? He's only had 21 base runners in 17 and two-thirds. That's a whip of 1.19. Anything under 1.2 is very good. Under 1 is probably not sustainable unless you're having a Cy Young caliber year. Under 1.3 is certainly where you want guys to be. Well, you move on down. Medlin, 2.38 ERA. His whip's 1.41. He's had 16 base runners in 11 and a third. And then you mentioned Ventura, 24 base runners in 16 innings. That's a 1.50. You know, either he's got to eliminate some of these base runners or they're going to come around and start scoring on him. And I think your point is a good one. They do have to be more pitch efficient. They do have to quit walking guys in particular, or it will eventually get them. They're stranding a lot of guys. You know, last night all their runs came with two outs. That's great. That's clutch hitting. Everybody wants that. That's also not sustainable. You've got to get some runs before you get to two outs. Nice job last night. Salvador Perez certainly carrying a lot of the load. Well, the same is true of the Royals. They're straining a lot of base runners. Yes, you want to do that. You want to bear down and get outs when you've got to get it. But historically, what you need to do is just flat out keep people off the bases. And they're not doing that to this point. Now, I will stick up for Ventura a little bit in last night's game from the standpoint that I thought the third inning was one where he could have caved and would have caved in the past. And, you know, it starts off with a single on a ground ball. Okay, hey, I made a pretty good pitch. They got a guy on, no big deal. Then he compounds it by having a throwing error. Gets the ground ball that should be the double play, or could be a double play. It's certainly going to be one out. And he throws the ball away and forces Escobar off the bag. So now he's got two men on and nobody out instead of two outs. Right there, he would normally start to fold the tent. Then Kinsler gets a fly ball deep. You're like, oh, that was well hit. And he makes a pitch into Justin Upton that he gets the ball in on his hands. A great pitch. I think it's exactly where he wanted it. And Upton's able to just kind of fist it out into the outfield. It drops in for a hit, and now you've got bases loaded. If you're Yordano Ventura, there's every reason to believe that, wait a minute, I got the ground ball. I got the ground ball to get the double play ball, and I just threw it away. Now I just beat a guy in on his hands. What do I have to do to get out of this situation? And here's Miguel Cabrera standing at the plate. And instead of melting down, he has a nice six-pitch battle with him and gets him looking on a changeup, or I think he swung over it maybe, on a changeup on the outside corner. That was a great inning for him. So, yeah, way too many pitches in getting through that inning. But I think we can see this scenario where that could have been a really pitch-efficient inning if you get the double play, if the Upton ball lands in a glove instead of just finding a safe little spot in between the outfield and the infield. And then he comes back in the fourth inning, has a good inning, and then in the fifth inning, again, the walk to Kinsler was big. That causes him to really extend the inning. Double allows the run to score, gets another walk. That's the one that really got him out of there. I think he was still going to get through six until that moment. So, yes, you know, long answer to your question. Yeah, they do need to be more pitch efficient. I think there are some signs, though, that in particular with Yordano Ventura, that he is making progress towards getting to that point.
Is there a point in time where Ned, now I remember, it pops in my head, the quote by Dick Vermeil about Larry Johnson, said, you know, it's time to take your diapers off. And what I mean by that, bringing this up, is that with Ned looking at his baseball team, and you sit here and you've got that great bullpen, although it hasn't been, you know, flawless, but really, really good, that he at some point is going to have to push the envelope a little bit and allow his starting pitchers to work past a little bit past 100 pitches and to allow them to try to get deeper into the games, because it's a great luxury to have when you have a Hochaver, when you have a Herrera, when you have a Davis, and if Soria is going right. And at some point, I guess and I'm not saying I know how to manage a baseball team, but I wonder where that line is where you don't want to overload the bullpen and you don't want to push the starters too far, but it almost seems like he's kind of got a measured approach, which I understand, but at some point will he have to sit here and go, you know what, Chris Medlin's going to have to work through the leadoff double or the one-out double, and I don't have to bring in Herrera, and he's only given up two hits. Or, you know, Ventura's got 98 pitches. In order to learn, he's got to get, you know, let's get him out to the sixth inning. Yeah, we might overextend a little bit. We don't want to have a Gilmesh and have him throw 134 pitches or anything crazy like that. Do you think there will be a point in time where Ned might have to deal with that?
Yeah, I think so. And I wrote a piece on our website at 810WHB.com last week about how much can the bullpen handle. And, you know, we remember Dayton Moore saying several years ago that what their goal is to get 1,000 innings from the rotation, that's what they really want to do. And I thought, you know, that's always rung in our minds. Well, let's back up. 2014, the starting pitchers en route to a World Series threw 986 innings. The bullpen really kind of established itself as a dominant bullpen that year. That was the story coming through the postseason, was how good that bullpen was. They threw only 464 innings in 14. Last year, he did work the pen more. James Shields was gone. You had some regression out of Yordano Ventura. Danny Duffy ended up losing his spot in the rotation. Jeremy Guthrie got bounced from the rotation. Jason Vargas, his elbow surgery came about. They get only 912 innings from the starting pitchers. Bullpen has to go 539 innings. They pile on 75 more innings onto the bullpen. Again, they handle it. Again, the bullpen is dominant in the postseason. Through the first eight games, they were pacing for only 891 innings from their starting pitching, and that hasn't gotten a lot better as we sit here now. I'd have to rerun the numbers now that we're through 13 games, but the bullpen was on pace for 567 innings. That's not ideal. I think a well-rested bullpen is an effective bullpen. Will be your best weapon. But the Royals have proven that, you know, the 1,000 innings mark is not magic. They won the World Series at 912 innings. So if you can go 912, can you go 911, 910, 900, 890, 870? Where is that spot that you maximize the pen? I think Ned Yost, number one, has done something that he doesn't get enough credit for, and that is by basically making the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning guys all closers. They all are used with clean innings, generally speaking, although Kelvin Herrera had to come into the game last night. But for the most part, he gets some clean innings, allows them a regular routine and warm-up schedule to come in and, I think, be as effective as possible and maybe reduce some of the wear and tear on their arms. And he's also willing to lose battles to win the war. I mean, there are guys that get a night off, he doesn't go and get them. You know, unless they get into some 15, 16-inning marathon, when a guy's told he's getting the night off, he gets the night off, and he goes with whoever is available. And if that ends up costing him the game, he's willing to give that game up to make sure he can nail down the wins when he does have his big boys ready. So I think he's better at handling the bullpen, maybe, than anybody's ever been. So I think that's an important part of the equation. And I think the Royals have done a really good job of twofold. One, managing the middle relief. And, you know, it was Chris Young for a lot of last year. You know, he did a great job. It was Joe Blanton who did a great job in that spot. And I think Dylan Gee and Chin-Ming Wong are the guys they're looking to, and maybe Danny Duffy if he can get right, to be those guys that can soak up two-plus, three-plus innings when you have to go out and get it. They're going to become much more a part of the equation as we roll into playing every day. You know, they're coming through this 10-game stretch or came through the 10-game stretch in 10 days. Then they get a day off. Now they're going in another stretch where they've got to play every day. I think those guys are going to be a key role. And then the other thing they did that I think Nate Morris should get credit for is really using the entire 40-man roster. You know, in the old days, you had a 25-man roster, and if you went down to the 26 through 40 on the 40-man, it was a necessity. It was something you had to do. You didn't want to, but an injury occurred or somebody just was terrible and you had to make that move. I think the Royals plan on using 32 to 35 guys. I mean, I think they've got bullpen down there, and you see Miguel Almonte come up for the paternity suit. They've got guys that they are ready and plan on using to keep guys healthy. There are more options on the team than you would think. Like Danny Duffy can be sent down at this point if he's not effective. They can go get somebody else. Or if he has to work a marathon session and just isn't ready, they can send him down. So, you know, what do you want to use more innings from the bullpen? No. Can you? Maybe. They have. They used more innings out of the bullpen last year than I think anybody would have thought their bullpen could be effective in the postseason, and it worked. Where is that barrier? What is the sound barrier, if you will, where you just can't push any further? I don't know, but I know they haven't gotten there yet.
Saran Petrov, Sports Radio 810 WHB, host of the program weekdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. I want to ask you about pitch efficiency, because this is something that's kind of been heavy on my mind recently, and I don't know if any of us have the answers, but I'm going to attempt to see if you can give me an answer, and that is, I've even noticed with Wade Davis, at least early in the year, where it's taking more pitches. We mentioned Volquez gets high pitch count. A lot of the starters aren't getting into the seventh inning or eighth inning to preserve that bullpen. We mentioned Ventura, 98, 99 pitches in five innings. Chris Young, you know, 80, 90 pitches in four and a third. Do you think the pitch efficiency thing, is this more about the Royals' approach with their starting pitchers each and every game? Is it the way the game is being called by Salvador Perez, or if Drew Butera is behind the plate? Because the Royals have one of the best defenses in baseball, and one of the simplest things I can throw out there is, hey, when you don't want to put guys on base and give them the free pass. Make them hit it, make them earn it. Do you think the Royals sometimes are a little bit too fine, and maybe that's why that the pitch counts get out of hand so quickly?
You know, I think part of it is they don't, you know, there's no Clayton Kershaw on this team. There's no Zach Greinke. You know, there are good pitchers, and you know, Ian Kennedy's the one guy who's kind of pitching like one of those guys. You know, at least when the rotation goes, they're guys that I think aren't quite fully number ones. And I think we're a little bit spoiled. First of all, I think we go back for a long time, and we spent so much of our lives going into spring training looking at the Royals and saying everything has to go exactly right. You know, no injuries. This prospect comes up and helps out. This guy duplicates whatever his best year was. This guy has his career year. And then if every one of those things happens, boy, the Royals could be in the playoffs. And what do you have there? You have a team that sucks because everything never goes right, right?
Yeah, right.
Good teams take on water. I mean, it's like a battleship. You know, you're going to get hit. You're going to take hits, and you have to be able to keep going and keep fighting. And that's what the Royals are proving. You know, I mentioned some of the injuries to the pitching staff last year. They also had Alex Bowden go down. And they still had enough depth and firepower to win baseball games. In fact, they even played better baseball without Alex Gordon than with him last year, and that's a testament to how deep the ball club was. And so, do they need to be pitch efficient? Yes. Do they need to be better over the long run? Yes. But are you going to be hitting great, pitching great starting pitching, great relief pitching, you know, good power, great on base, high frequency of contact, never strike out? Are you going to do all those things? No. You're going to have weaknesses. You're going to have negatives. The question is, are you a deep enough and strong enough team? Are your strengths strong enough to overcome those weaknesses? And right now it is for the Royals. They need to get more pitch efficient. But let's be honest, Edinson Volquez has never been the most pitch efficient guy. To this point, Yordano Ventura has not been the most pitch efficient guy in his career. So I don't think any of them are going to suddenly turn into Greg Maddux. And I think we've got to be prepared to live with that. And I think the Royals are prepared to live with that. And that's why Dylan Gee and Chin-Ming Wong and those guys are on this team ready to either step in and pick up where, you know, maybe a Chris Young can't carry things, or at least soak up some of those innings to give their bullpen a little more rest. So, yeah, they need to do better. I think they will do better. I think some of those guys are performing below their career averages. But I think we also need to understand that that's just not going to be their strength. And as long as the bullpen doesn't get overworked and the key guys are ready to go at the end of the year for a postseason run, then the Royals should be in pretty good shape once they get to the point in the season where you play only five-inning baseball. Look, I can see the time coming. There's been so much research on how the third time through the order kills all pitchers. I mean, everybody gets worse once a hitter's seen them three times, right? So, seen them two times. So I'm not so sure that the future isn't just a couple of, you know, guys on each rotation, or one or two or three, the truly elite pitchers that can go through a lineup three times, and then every other starting pitcher, your fours and fives, or threes, fours, and fives, are really just there to get 18 batters. And anything over that is gravy. And then you've got a quality middle guy piggybacking behind each of those guys to take you through the next couple of innings and then do the one-inning little relay that the Royals like to do so much. So I think the Royals really, you know, so much is made of their athleticism, rightfully so, their defense, rightfully so. I think the Royals deserve a little credit for maybe unlocking some of the statistical advantages that are there, and recognizing that, you know, number one, a bullpen can be used more if you use it right, that you don't have to get 1,000 innings out of the starting pitching staff, that you don't necessarily have to have the highest on-base percentage if you have athleticism and can go first to third. I think the Royals, you know, this is not as much luck as a lot of people want to make it, and more by design, and we should trust a little bit more, and they've earned our trust in trusting in their process and how they go about winning these games.
No, I totally agree with you. And one guy that I certainly trust, and that is Dayton Moore. I mean, you can't argue with his track record, especially when it comes to free agent pitchers or, of course, the trades that he has made that's turned around the franchise, the Greinke trade, the Shields, Wade Davis trade for Will Myers. And, of course, last year, giving up a lot in the farm system, but still getting two guys that were vital to the Royals winning the World Series. You mentioned the Royals didn't skip a beat when Gordon went down. Of course, they got Ben Zobrist. That was a great pickup, and he was instrumental in the Royals winning the World Series. And Johnny Cueto came up big in the World Series with a couple of key starts as well. But those two guys no longer with the Royals. And so I want to ask you this. Chris Young is in the Royals rotation, and he has three of the four Royals losses. He's not a guy that you're expecting to go deep in games no matter what, really, quite honestly, with his age and everything else. Chris Young, what's the leash on Chris Young? What do you think Ned might do there in regards to if Chris continues to struggle? Do you go to Wong? You go to G? Obviously, I don't think Duffy's an option after the way he's been pitching.
No, and I think it'll be interesting to watch if he does start to piggyback one guy, if we start to see the same guy come in after him. You know, how long is the leash? Longer than we've seen to this point. I mean, I think he's going to get more time to get it going. I mean, it's the old thing that I like to say, if not him, then who? Right? If he's not going to be the guy, then who are you going to go to? You got to have a compelling second option to go to be that guy. And right now I don't see that guy. I think both Wong and Gee are your best candidates. Gee's away from the team right now. Wong, you're going to need to stretch out. Duffy is not answering the bell. He would be one of your guys as well. Miguel Almonte's had at least one rough start, to the year, but he's now up with the team. He'd be one of the guys that you might point to. But overall, just, his first start was so bad, the numbers look pretty bad, but bounce back with a better start the next time out for the Royals. So he would be your next guy up. Kyle Zimmer's not pitching, so I don't think he's one of the one of the possible answers. And really, I think the rest of the guys, I don't see the guy right now in the minor leagues that you can reasonably say, well, this guy's going to come in and do a good job for us. So, I think it's probably Wong as the lead, Wong or G right now, but I think he gets, probably into at least May before they even consider making any kind of move with him. But I think he is the guy. He's the guy I've had the most concern about. And, he's going to get maybe three more starts before May, or say three more starts. I'd say about that long before you look to make a decision. But at 37 years old and a guy that, isn't your classic pitcher, I know everybody's, well, velocity's not important for him. He doesn't throw hard. And yeah, there's two ways to look at that. Either one, yeah, he never threw hard, so losing a couple miles per hour, what does it mean? Or you say, look, he doesn't throw hard. He's barely making the minimum it takes to get a major league hitter off balance. And what happens when you lose a little bit of velocity is it's not just losing the velocity off your fastball. It's that your fastball and your change of speeds, whether it's a breaking ball or a straight change, they start to get closer together. There's less of a difference there to get the timing off on the hitters, and you start to get hit. And that's the question. Is that where they are now with Chris Young, or no? Is it just he needs to refine some things in his repertoire? I think for one thing, Chris Young took a lot of people by surprise. I think everybody thought he was done. That's why he was available to sign into spring training last year, and I don't know how serious everybody took him. They know who he is, what he does now. The Royals are world champs. He played a big role in that coming through the postseason, and I think now they're very much aware of how he goes about doing things, and they have a game plan and how to hit him, and he's going to have to adjust, and we'll see if he's got the stuff to adjust to what they're doing to him.
What has happened to Danny Duffy? I mean, Danny Duffy, I remember before going into the 2014 playoffs that, Duffy is going to come out of the bullpen. A lot of people are like, wow, honestly, he's probably our best starting pitcher. How can he not be in the rotation? The Royals were very quiet about what was going on with him health-wise, and he didn't have a great record that year, but his ERA was very low. He had really horrible run support. He pitched really well throughout the year. And then he had the injury, and then he pitches sparingly in the postseason, and then last year did not have a good year, and now he's relegated to the bullpen. I was personally excited about him being in the bullpen, thinking, wow, you got a power lefty in there, and there's certainly time for him to correct it and fix it. But when you look at the Royals' rotation, and you mentioned the possible candidates to replace Chris Young, the Royals don't have anybody in the minors, or really anybody on their roster right now, that's a homegrown player that they drafted that should be probably taking that spot for Chris Young. It really, Chris Young's spot to me should be Danny Duffy's, but he hasn't gone out and earned it.
Yeah, and on this one, I'll use a little bit of the, one of those advanced metrics, one that I like, the fielding independent pitching, which is what, it's just the stuff that's, what he controls. It factors out the ability to go get defense. It's just about the things that he actually controls. And in that year you're talking about where he was, amongst the league leaders, leading the American League in ERA for part of the season in 2014, finished with a 2.53 ERA, fielding independent pitching, and they multiply it to bring it down to look like ERA, was a 3.83. By for example, right now he's got a 3.87. So there's a little bit of, theoretically bad luck in what he's got going on right now. I think, he wasn't as good as he looked then. Shockingly, the hits that he was allowing were very low. He was still walking. He walked 153 in 149 innings. That's more than one every three innings. That number's a little bit too high, but it's on par with the rest of his career. What was not happening was guys weren't getting hits. He had only 113 hits in 149 innings. That was kind of a statistical anomaly, and he was incredibly successful for the first two-thirds of the season against lefties. I mean, they just could not get a hit off him, and that's turned around a little bit. I think, obviously, the major leagues have adjusted to Danny Duffy. He still has yet to find a way to adjust back to what they're doing to him. So, I think that is a work in progress. That is something that that he needs to be, you know, trying to accomplish. And we'll see if he can turn the corner and get that done.
You have the Royals winning the division?
I do have them winning the division. I'm winning it at 92 wins. And, you know, I'll settle in about there. I think that's still a solid spot to be. I think, you know, they're off to a pace that's better than 92 wins, but it's early. I think they'll have their dog days as well. But, yeah, I think, you know, this team has got all the pieces it needs. I think they'll probably need to make an acquisition at the trade deadline, but I think they've got enough bullets. I don't think they're going to need to go get a Johnny Cueto. That's one of the things. Either Edinson Volquez needs to pitch like a one. Ian Kennedy needs to keep pitching like a one. Or Yordano Ventura needs to become a one. They don't have to necessarily be a guy that you say, well, you know, our ace will be your ace. You know, if you're going up against Clayton Kershaw in the World Series, they just need to be able to do the kind of things like Yordano Ventura did against Matt Harvey in Game 5 of the World Series. Keep us at 2-1 or 1-0 so our bullpen and our late-inning clutch inning can get it done. And I think they can go very deep again. Right now, Kennedy's giving you everything you wanted and more. As long as that continues, I like the Royals to be able to win the division.
Saran Petro of 810 WHB Kansas City, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Before we let you go, want to ask you a little bit about the Chiefs. The Chiefs offseason so far, how would you grade it out? What grade would you give the Chiefs before we get to the draft next week?
F.
F.
I think
that was harsh.
I think Chiefs fans are whistling by the graveyard when they look at this offseason. I think that the Chiefs PR department has done a masterful job of really, you know, basically saying don't look behind the curtains and what's going on. It's not to say that they can't salvage it, and it's not to say that every move they've made is wrong. Let me explain the F a little bit. You know, I like the signing of Schwartz to play right tackle, and so when you lose, you know, Donald Stevenson and Jeff Allen to get Schwartz to step in a tackle, I think you're okay. They like their young interior guys and Mitch Morse and Zach Fulton and Lawrence Duvernay-Tardif. I think they probably like Paul Fenneco, who was hurt last year. People forget about him coming over from Arizona. So I think along the offensive line, and Eric Fisher really came on in the second half of last year, I think that's okay. That's acceptable. There's no problem there. They got a number of guys re-signed along the defensive line. They kept Eric Berry with the franchise tag. I probably wouldn't have put that kind of number on a safety that doesn't create turnovers, but they did. You know, so they kept it, for the most part, everybody in the mix, except for Sean Smith, which is, to me, the Raiders overpaid for him, and they've got the cap room to do it. So that's okay. Where it gets an F is the fact that they really, you know, when you talk about off-season, that's usually what everyone talks about, free agents coming and going. There's more to it than that. They've lost a third-round pick in the draft, and they've been good, and teams should be good in the third round. You know, Travis Kelce came in the third round. They're not going to have a third rounder. There will be no Travis Kelce found in the third round for the Kansas City Chiefs. That's an important part of the equation because they botched it. They tampered and tampered apparently at a level that nobody else has ever tampered at before because they got by far the harshest penalty that's ever been handed down. And I've said a couple of times, what were they doing? Was Andy Reid and John Dorsey in a hot tub drinking Cristal with Jeremy Maclin with a contract in his hand and, you know, making it rain with $100 bills around us? Like, what the hell did you do to get by? Nobody's gotten more than like a fifth round pick. They lose a third and a sixth. That's unbelievable to have that kind of penalty dropped on you. Throw in the fact that they completely botched Justin Houston's knee injury. No, he was fine when he got hurt against Buffalo. We're going to get him going. He goes down to see Dr. Andrews, comes back, everything's fine. They bring him back in a playoff game. So at the end of November, he had the injury, comes into a playoff game, can't play at all, is falling down without contact because there's no stability in the knee. Nobody seems to see that on tape. They play in eight more snaps against the Lakers where he doesn't do anything. So they didn't have surgery with him at the end of November to get him to play in the playoffs, and he was completely ineffective in the playoffs. Then they take another month before they realize something's wrong with the knee. They're adamant that the knee was not injured more by playing in the playoffs. So basically the injury he had that required surgery in February occurred in November, and they didn't get around to doing surgery until the middle of February. And so now he's out 6 to 12 months, half to maybe the entire season this year. That is a complete debacle of the medical staff handling that situation. Whose fault is it? I don't know. Was it Justin Houston trying to warrior up? Don't know. Was it the Chiefs doctor? Was it Dr. Andrews? I don't know whose fault it is, but it's somebody's fault, and it is a titanic, drastic mistake by the organization. Throw in Tom Bailey's contract voiding and costing the Chiefs $4 million in dead cap money, then going ahead and re-signing him 3 days later when had you done a renegotiation beforehand, you could have prorated that $4 million in dead money out over the cap and had it only cost you a little over $1 million. That is just sloppy, asleep at the wheel, incompetence. and I don't think there's any way around it. They can salvage it with a good draft, right? That can help. If they nail the first and second round and find a diamond in the rough, find a Jared Allen in the fourth round, then, yeah, they can come out guns blazing and be a better football team. But there is no way that today, as they sit here, and when they take the field on opening day, there is no way that they will be a better football team than what they were last season. There's no way. You don't lose Sean Smith and tell me that even if you draft a corner in the first round, that you're going to open up and be better at that cornerback position. Tom Bahley's a year older with another knee surgery on him. Justin Houston's not going to play. There's no way you're better right now. Now, again, a great draft can make them better, but the object of the offseason is to get better, and they did not get better. They got worse, and they got worse through their own doing things that could have been avoided. I think you have to give that an F for the offseason.
Well, and it's going to be hard to have a great draft, as you said, when you don't have a third-round pick, and your first-round pick is at the bottom of the first round at number 28. Would you say best available? Do you believe in best available at whatever, wherever you pick? Or are you sitting here going, the Chiefs have a major need for corner to replace Sean Smith? Phillip Gaines coming off the ACL. You never know with ACL injuries. Sean Smith, of course, a bigger corner in Gaines. And then, with Smith not there, how's that going to impact Marcus Peters? Are they going to totally stay away from Marcus Peters? Are they going to go right after him? Maybe Sean Smith helped make Marcus Peters a better player than maybe we think. I don't know. But at 28, if you're the GM, what are you looking at?
You know, I do think particularly at 28, it's got to be best player available just because, you know, you're getting down there to where, you know, there could be a guy who slides down that you had number 9 on your board that's still there at 28. And so if you're passing up a great pass rusher to reach for a corner that you have projected as a third-round guy, you're making a mistake, right? So I think at 28, you have to go best player available. And really, I think that is the right philosophy. John Dorsey talks about it all the time. And I think it is the right philosophy. Wherever you pick, take the best player available. Use free agency to fill your gaps. I mean, I think the approach that the Chiefs take, and I think it's the right one, I think John Dorsey does a good job of this, is using free agency to be able to take the field and go play games before you ever get to the draft. I think that's the right approach to have. Know you've got competent NFL players everywhere. Of course, you want difference makers, as many of them as you can get, but use free agency to make sure you can line up and play. I think the Chiefs have done that in free agency to add to the safety spot. They did it to add to the right tackle spot, and I think those are their biggest holes. If they've missed somewhere, it's probably at corner. They're counting a lot on a surgically repaired knee on Phillip Gaines to come back and be the difference for them at that cornerback spot. If that happens, then they're in good position. If you wanted to say what's their biggest need, I'd say it's corner/wideout because I don't think Albert Wilson should be a starting wide receiver in the NFL. So I think those two spots, they might be counting on Chris Conley to step up. Let's hope he does, but we have no proof yet at the NFL level that he is a starting caliber wideout. Those are the two places right now, and we don't have proof that Phillip Gaines is either. Gaines and Wilson are the two guys that are starting that to this point have not proven to be NFL playoff caliber starters. So those are their two biggest needs. And if they go with one of those two positions, you can really look at it and say, did they draft need? And the answer may very well be yes. If they take some other position, I think they're good to go and can play right now at any other position. So it will be interesting. Their MO is to take a guy at the spot. Now, this is why I don't think he necessarily practices what he preaches when he talks best player available. Every first-round pick the Chiefs have taken has been at a position that the following year the Chiefs run the risk of losing a high-impact free agent. They were going to lose Brandon Albert. They took Eric Fisher. Justin Houston wasn't signed, and Tom Bahley wasn't getting any younger. They took Dee Ford. Sean Smith was a year away from being gone. They took Marcus Peters. The guy that fits that list is either, one, Dontari Poe, who will be a free agent after this year, or Eric Fisher, if they're not going to put the extension tag on him, which will cost them about $11 million. They're said to be negotiating a long-term deal. I think that'll get taken care of. So if they go D-line, that's where I would look. If you want to look, you look corner, wide out if they're drafting need. You look D-line if they're going with what appears to have been their plan going into the last three first-round draft picks that they've made.
All right, time for off-the-wall questions, Saran. I had one, but now since you said something during this interview, I've added one to the list.
All right.
Off-the-wall questions, number one. Did you ever get an F in school? Because you were – I don't know if I want you as my teacher because you didn't skip a beat. Give the Chiefs an F. So did you ever get an F in school?
I did not, at least not that I can remember. You know, I wasn't setting any records as a student, but I did just enough to make mom happy.
Well, that's good. That's smart. It's election year. Candidates are looking for endorsements. I've heard you endorse Cool Sculpting, Mosquito Guard, Low T Center. So the question, is there anything or anyone you wouldn't endorse?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's Mosquito Squad, by the way.
Oh, it's Squad? Oh, well, my bad. My apologies.
Mosquito Squad.
Okay.
Yes, there are plenty of things. I won't. In fact, I do endorse many a product. I actually turn down more than I actually do endorse.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. I was thinking maybe you had something to do with the political landscape, but you stayed away from it. So,
no, you know what? I don't know enough about politics. I got asked this morning who won in New York, and I didn't know. And then I said, "Well,
the Yankees."
I could kind of reverse engineered. I assume it was Trump and Clinton because they're from New York. And they said, "Yeah, you're right."
Right.
I can't stand. There's no accountability for politicians. You know, at least we can fire GMs. Politicians, you can't fire. So it frustrates me to no end. So I'm really a political moron. I think they all suck. I'm an equal opportunity offender. They all get F's in my book.
I'm with you right there, man. We can teach a class together. Hey, Saran, appreciate the time as always, buddy. I appreciate it very, very much. And we'll talk to you soon. And continue success with the program there at 810 WHB in Kansas City.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Always great being on with you. Call me anytime, Wade.
That's Saran Petro, Sports Radio 810 WHB Kansas City, our guest on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill and Downs.